Welcome to Trapping Across America, where fur brothers meet every week. Where we're still allowed to be men, and we're proud to be from the land of the fur and the home of the brave. Smell that. It's trapping season. It's the time that we all wait for. Oh, good gosh, I've been waiting a long time for this. Oh, man, it's fall time. Today's beautiful bluebird day. It's kind of cool. Leaves are changing colors. Holy crap, am I glad to be an American trapper. Welcome to Trapping Across America. This is your host, Clint Locklear, just thoroughly enjoying the gift of being a trapper this time of year. Getting to get a little dirty, getting to get a little wet, playing with some wildlife, making some money, just having a good time. Just being American and enjoying every single second of it. I hope you're doing the same wherever you're at. I mean, what a great time to be alive this time of year. Not having to sweat to death. You're not waiting about something being here. It's now game time, guys. This is what we all been waiting for. Tonight, we've got what I consider one of the best interviews that I've ever got to do, mostly because I've been hooked and I've been wanting to get this interview for about 2 to 3 years. It's Leon from Kentucky. It is just, it's just one of those really cool interviews because of who he is and the way he talks and the way he can tell a story. Now, he says he can't talk, and that's BS. When I asked him a long time ago, how did he get into trapping? And he told me about the magic in the sack. I've been hooked ever since on listening to him talk about trapping. It is a great interview. You're going to like it. You're going to learn some stuff. But I promise you, you're going to be entertained on this. Because it was one of those things that I have to admit. I do a lot of interviews, get to talk with a lot of trappers. But this is one of those I really didn't want it to be over. I enjoy talking with him that much. So before we get to that, let's go ahead and get to our sponsors because they do a lot to help keep the Trapping Radio on the show. I really appreciate y'all for when y'all call up or see them at a convention or something. Y'all thank them for doing this. I know it means a lot to them. I know it definitely means a lot to me. It helps us keep this thing going. First sponsor this week is Blue Ridge Outdoor Supplies. Scott Painter is up there in Virginia. He's servicing those guys up there. He's got a really neat snore. If you're around that area, stop in and see him. He's got supplies there, shipping it out every day. Really good guy. You can reach him at BlueRidgeOutdoorSupplies.com, or you can give him a call at 540-298-7227. Now, he's running a special right now for Trapping Radio listeners only. If you order $100 worth of supplies, which doesn't take that much to get $100 worth of supplies anymore, he's going to give you $5 off. For what? Just being a Trapping Radio listener. I want to thank Scott for that. And if you're going to be buying some supplies somewhere, that's something you might want to keep in mind. That's $5 free for doing nothing but listening to Trapping Radio. Next sponsor this week is F&T Fur Harvesters Trading Post. They have everything you need for trapping, hunting with hounds, and predator calling. I know they're humping it up there, getting the orders out and all that stuff. When you give them a call, you can talk to several guys that are going to be on the phone, the same guys you're going to see on the F&T Freedom Outdoor Show and all that stuff they got going on. They're trappers. If you got questions, you can talk with them. You can reach them at fntpost.com. That's Foxtrot November Tango. post.com. They're running monthly specials. They got specials on lures and traps and everything, but whatever you need, they've got it. They're like the Cabela's of the trapping industry and the hunting with hounds and the predator calling. Really good guys to deal with. You can give them a call at 989-727-8727. Third sponsor and our original sponsor for Trapping Radio is Oki Cable and Trap Supply. You can reach Jeb at oktrapsupply.com, or you can give him a call at 918-429-4648. Now, Jeb's also running a special just for Trapping Radio listeners. For a month only, if you order a gallon of Bobcat urine, He's going to sell that to you for $30. $30. That's dang near wholesale. He's giving that out retail just to trapping radio listeners only for 1 month. That's, you're saving anywhere on that price from 10 to 25, 30 bucks, depending on where you get it. He's got good quality stuff, so if you're needing it, give him a call. He's got all kind of supplies. He's got the Z-traps. He's got boards. He's got all kind of traps. Whatever you're looking for, Jeb will hook you up. Just give him a call or look him up online. He always likes to talk with trappers, and his service is next to none. Fourth sponsor this week, last but not least, is Wildlife Control Supplies. You can reach them at wildlifecontrolsupplies.com. You can give them a call for Continental U.S. at 877-684-7262. For international numbers, you can call them at 860-844-0101. The proven solutions for wildlife control. They deliver value, expertise, and products to the wildlife industry. Anybody and everybody that's in the ADC business that does not have this on a favorites tag on your computer, I don't understand why. Because when you come up to different things and different projects, you're going to always need a certain kind of trap with a little bit of twist or a certain type of lure or exclusion. Equipment, safety tools, odor control, reference manuals, they've got everything you need at Wildlife Control Supplies. Alan Hoyt's the owner of that. I've known him for years. Super guy to deal with. Glad he's a sponsor on the radio show, and he will take care of you if you're in the ADC business. Even if you're not, you may be surprised if you're a fur trapper what you find there that may make your life just a little bit easier as you go out and trap some fur. Now for Clint's rant of the week, if you want to call this rant, when I was up in Ohio, I was doing some filming with Alan Probst doing some trapper tips for the F&T show coming up. Now, while I was up there, we're also working on a project with a bunch of guys that you know and you're gonna know it, through TrappingTV.com, which is a project that'll be coming online where you'll be able to watch actually like a TV show starting January. We're going to run 13 episodes. Let me tell you, it's balls to the walls is what it's going to be. If you want to know what Predator Control Group does, you're going to see it live and in livid color when you see this. But one of the things we were doing, we got to goofing around. We had a bunch of dog proof traps there. So I was like, well, with a camera on, let's just test these dog proof traps, because I'm hearing over and over on trapping forums and questions and emails and phone calls, well, trap A is better than trap P, and trap B's got less pressure than trap A, and going back and forth and this, that, and the other. And it's always using numbers that are very abstract. I don't like abstract numbers. Abstract numbers means you don't know the number. So, guys at Trapper TV, we turn the cameras on. We laid all the dog proofs out. We come up with a system to fire the traps, and we use a fish scale to check the pull. We use a push tester to test the push part of the trigger on the traps that has a push pull trigger, and then we used a piece of wire where we would push down on the trigger till it fired, take that out of the trap, it would leave a bubble on the wire so it's obvious where the holding bar hit it. We would reset the trap, set that back on top of the trigger, and measure the distance between where it was and where the rod hits it, so you'll know exactly how far the trigger went down. We did complete opposite on the trigger pull. We just put a bend in the wire, fire the trap off, measure it that way. Some interesting numbers that I'm going to go over real quick. This because I think it's one of those things, if you're going to talk dog-proof traps, you should know some numbers. Now, before we get into this, I want to be real clear about one thing. All these traps were new. All these traps were extremely clean. And when I get done, I'm going to say something about that. Now, all these traps were stock except for one, because I have actually tuned my Freedom Brand Dog Proof traps. That is the advantage of using a precise built trap, is you can tune it any way you want to. With the more primitive style traps like the Dukes and the Daggers and the Grizz and stuff like that, there's not a whole lot of tuning. So whatever comes from the factory is whatever it comes from the factory. But my Freedom Brands were tuned because that's the traps I'm using. I want them at optimum level. So keep that in mind when you hear these numbers. And in January or February, whenever this part of the show runs, you'll get to see this whole test on TrappingTV.com. Test one, how far is the distance that is required for the trigger to move up, which is pull, to fire the trap? So when the trigger comes up, how far does it move? When we tested the traps, we tested a Z trap, which was 3/4 of an inch before it fired. Dagger was 3/4 of an inch. Little Grizz was 5/8 of an inch. The Freedom brand was zero. And I know that's hard to believe, but when you'll see it on film, we did it like 3 times because I was amazed at that. But that is a modified trap, not modified, but tuned. The Duke was 3/4 of an inch and the T3 Bridger was 1 inch. Now test two, how far does the trigger move down before the trap fires? So if you got a push-pull trigger and the animal pushes the trigger down, how far does it go before the trigger fires? Z trap, 1/4 of an inch. Dagger, 1/4 of an inch. Freedom brand, 1/8 of an inch. That's pretty much straight across the board there. Obviously, it's better leverage on these traps when you push the trigger down than it is pull the trigger up, at least on most of them. So that was an interesting number to me. Okay, test three. How much poundage is required to fire the trap by pulling up on the trigger? So what is the amount of force that a raccoon must apply to the trigger to pull it? Keep in mind, he's not grabbing this thing like a enraged orangutan or something and jerking on the trigger. He has no reason to grab the trigger and jerk it like a brake lever in a car. I mean, it's not happening. So, but how much tension when he pulls up on that trigger does it take to fire the trap? The Duke, it took 1.5 pounds. The Little Grizz was 1.5 pounds to fire the trap. The Duke was 1/4 pound. The Z trap was 1 pound. The Freedom brand was 1/4 pound, and the T3 Bridger was 1.5 pounds, and the Dagger was 1 pound. So that's how much pressure takes on the trigger to fire. Test four we did. How many pounds to fire the trap when the trigger is pushed? There again, like the other numbers, this is showing they're a little better at leverage when they do this. Z trap, 1/2 pound. Freedom brand, 1/4 pound. Dagger, 1.5 pounds. I'm thinking the difference between the Dagger and the Z-Trap is the Z-Trap we tested is the newer ones that have the round tip on there instead of the flat bar, so it's going to allow leverage to work for you a little bit. So what's all that mean, guys? I mean, really. Some fire quicker, some fire slower, some fire with more force, some fire don't. You know, all I'm doing is giving you the numbers. You're going to have to do some critical thinking, and you're going to have to do some logic all on your own. To me, personally, I think a trap needs to have the shortest throw it can on the trigger because the coon's just not going to sit there and heave on that thing. And I think it needs to be the less pound as possible where the trap doesn't fire just because the coon bumps it. Because he's not really grabbing the trigger most of the time. His hands and the bait and stuff are trying to get worked around the trigger. That's my way of thinking. If it's the right way, I have no idea. Does this mean one trap is better than the other? I have no idea. But I will say, these numbers are going to get grossly different, and there's no way to test for this. But once you start trapping season and you get some mud and rust on these traps, the distance and the forces are probably going to get more exaggerated. So when you're putting honey and molasses and coon crack and whatever type of concoction and slop you're going to put down in that trap and it's spilling all over the thing, that's going to make things stickier and it's going to make them not work as good. All these traps, guys, were spotless when we did the test. So keep that in mind, too. What does that mean for you? I have no idea. Sometimes just testing something goes, there's some numbers, and maybe somewhere down the road something will happen to you, and then these numbers will mean more for you. Like I said, you may like a longer throw on your trap. You may like more pressure on your trap. You may like a shorter throw or less pressure. I'm going to leave that totally up to you. I'm not going to get into what I think, you know, the winner is, because like I said, this is just a test we did to put some of this to rest about this trigger moves more than that trigger and yada, yada, yada. So keep in mind, though, hands down, if something's taking 1 pound to push now, and you get a bunch of slop on there, it's going to be way more than 1 pound to fire that trap in the trapping season. So this is under very clean conditions with clean traps. I just thought that was interesting. It's something we just came off the top of our head when I was up there goofing around up at Mike's house. We turned the cameras on and we got to test, and it was pretty neat because some of the numbers were kind of surprising. But just something out there, guys, think about it. Now, if you want to read these, in case you can't remember what I just told you, you can go to Wolfer Nation. We got a post up there, test 1, 2, 3, and 4 down with what trap it is and all that type of good stuff. So we're going to go on after that, let you kind of bounce around in your head a little bit about that, and we're going to go on and get with our interview because, like I said, this is a dandy.
So who am I sitting with on this Saturday morning up in Kentucky? It's rolling.
Leon Smith.
Leon. So you're from Kentucky.
Bear Creek, about 5 miles from here. Born and raised.
But you hadn't been here. Well, we'll get into some of that other stuff. Are you an officer in the Kentucky?
Yes, fourth region.
Fourth region. Mm-hmm. And are you the one that's kind of putting on the show up here?
Yeah, trying to, my son and I. And so far we had a good crowd yesterday. For Friday, we had a real good crowd.
I think for Kentucky you really did.
Yeah.
I want to start with magic in a bag. Your son wanted me to do that anyway, and you brought it up yesterday. Well, how did you get into trap? First off, how old are you?
77. 77, I've been to Alaska 3 times in the last 4 or 5 years on a motorcycle by myself the last time. And I'd never rode a motorcycle until I was almost 40 years old. And I like it. I rode dirt bikes a lot, but everybody's got the land posted and everything now. You can't do stuff like that, so highway's open. So that's what we do.
77?
Yeah.
You're not 77.
Yeah, I'm 77. Lived every year of it. I've got artificial knees. That's one thing. I've climbed so many hills. And when I was a kid, people would tell me they'd rather go up a hill than down. And I thought, well, that's the stupidest thing I ever heard. But I got to know what they mean, you know. That hurts going over a hill. A guy shook hands with me yesterday, and I was sitting down, and I told him, I said, excuse me, if I don't get up, I said, these knees only work so many times, and I don't want to waste one on you. So, he said, that's okay.
So how did you get started trapping? What lit the bug in you?
Well, two things. First of all, I was raised in the country. We didn't have any money. We didn't have anything. There wasn't any welfare programs or nothing like that. If you had money for something, you had to go out and earn it or make it. And I found out that trapping was a way that I could. I started out, I remember the first time I ever had 2 nickels at the same time. And I caught 2 moles for my uncle. He gave me a nickel apiece. In one day, I made 10 cents. So it was burning a hole in my pocket. So I went to, back then, a moon pie and a big RC cola was a thing. And them RCs was like this. They wasn't these little bitty bottles, you know. So I went to the store and I spent my dime. I got a moon pie and a RC cola. And the guy said, boy, you can't drink that. And, you know, that was the wrong thing to tell me, because I remember I thought, I'll drink that or bust one. It took me about 30 minutes, but I did. And I went and laid it on the counter and belched real big. And I said, I did. So, and then I went to one room school building. We had a teacher who was 17 years old, and we had boys and men in the 7th and 8th grade that was 20 and 21. And this guy, our teacher, he was scared of those big old guys. And he would have our class first thing in the morning, and he would spend 5 minutes with the first grade. Then he'd tell us to go out and play, you know, and we'd play till 3 o'clock. We caught mud turtles, we caught copperheads, little old six-year-old boys. And one day,
I don't remember school being that fun.
Oh, it was like that. That's the reason I don't know anything now, you know, because I'm ambidextrous. I write better with my right hand, but quicker with my left hand, because I wasn't mean, but I would do stuff. And the teacher back then, for punishment, after they got through whipping you, was write it like 1,000 times on the board. I will not do that again. Well, I wasn't the sharpest knife in the drawer, but I learned pretty quick. If I used both hands, I could get done twice as quick. So I'd ride it with both hands and kind of mess my mind up. So I ain't been right since. But one day, all us little first graders, were out in the yard playing or out on the creek. It was right on the school, little one-room school building. It's called Bear Creek. It was right beside the creek. And back then, we had fish. The old-timers called them green perch, but they were smallmouth bass is what they were. And that creek was full of them. We'd catch those. And a guy from a dock came down catching minnows one time, and we helped him. This is while school was going on, and we was a mile from the... Nobody paid any attention to the kids back then. Now they'd be scared to death.
Mm-hmm.
We helped him catch the minnows, and he gave us an old seine, minnow seine. And that opened up a whole new world for us. Boy, we caught every fish. And we'd catch these big old goggle eyes and smallmouth, and we'd dig us out a big hole in the gravel bar and put them in there. But we got to noticing that every morning when they go to school, there would be some of them missing. So I went in one morning, and there was a big old water snake. I bet it was 5 foot long, and he had one of them big goggle-eye bass hung there in his throat, you know. So after I got through killing him, that ended the problem. But I started to tell you, one day we was out in the playing, and there was a vehicle pulled up. Now, this was in the early 40s. And a guy came down through there, had a grass sack on his back, tote bag, some people call them. We call them grass sacks back then. It looked like a pretty good load, but we went to hollering, you know, well, like kids will do, hey, mister, what are you doing? But he wouldn't even talk to us. And he went on down the creek. Well, the next morning, we saw him go down, and he had his sack, but it wasn't bulged out or nothing. And we kept looking, and after a while, he came back up the creek, and he had that sack on his back, and they was, we could see some tails sticking out. One or two of them had rings around it. We didn't know what a coon was. And we tried to talk to him, and he wouldn't talk to us. But there was magic in that sack. I mean, that I knew he had caught something. And from then on, back then there was magazines come out, and over in the left column over there, there'd always be a picture of a guy, and it would say, become a government trapper. And man, I'd look at that and read that, and that was what I wanted to do. I wanted to someday be a government trapper, but I didn't have any means or any ways, nobody helped you or anything. And after I wound up, believe it or not, as a school principal, and I didn't have many rules, but they were enforced, and I had great kids.
Did you paddle with both hands like you wrote with both hands?
No, I just took one hand because I had a big paddle. But I didn't do it very much because, like I said, I had rules. They knew if they stepped over the line. We only had two or three rules, but they were enforced, and they knew it. And I think if I had 99 students, I think 98 of them would have went through the wall for me, and I know I would have them, and we understood each other like that. Then after I finally retired, I got to go to Colorado and become a government trapper, and the reality was better than the dream.
Now, what just, time of the world was this?
This was 96, 95 and 96 is when I retired. I've been retired about 20-some years now. And but on the way out there, this my boss, the guy that's over the ADC, Animal Damage Control Group, I had been helping him guide an elk every winter for, you know, a long time. I'd get off of school for a couple of weeks and go out there and help him. And so he had an opening, and he told me to come out and hire me. So between here and there, he had a heart attack, and I didn't know it. But when he got out there, he was in the hospital, couldn't do anything, so they handed me the keys to a pickup, keys to a four-wheeler, gave me the cyanide capsules and the guns and the shotgun shells and the snares and a map of Colorado and said, go get them.
Really? Now,
for a little old country boy that had never much been out of Cumberland County, you know, and some of the guys, the other trappers, there was one from Nebraska, two from Colorado, you know, and... one of them was real helpful. Two or three of them wasn't. I don't know if it's jealousy or what. But, you know, we'd get on the radio and they'd want me to come and help them. I'd say, where are you? He'd say, Northwest Colorado.
That's a big place.
That's a big place, you know. I tell you, I had always wondered what was over the mountain, and I got to find out. Just more mountains and better than ever. Of course, the big thing out there then, the spring of year, was finding coyote dens. You know, I love to hunt for the coyote dens, and I found more than they did, and I caught a lot more stuff. And believe it or not, they got jealous of me. But I would have done it for nothing. You know, I got paid a little, but not much. But they got jealous, And I talked to him one day. I got him all together. I said, listen, boys, I ain't trying to outdo y'all or put you down nothing. I said, I love to do this. I'm doing it because I want to do. And, of course, they was doing it as a job. But the I'm Rangers. Sure
the entrepreneur in me wishes I'd have met you about that time. I'd had you all over the country.
I'd have loved to done it, I tell you. But I enjoyed it. I caught 96 red foxes in 2 weeks. And it was, when those lambs are first born, man, them red foxes eat them like candy for about a week till they get so big. Boy, they was laying them. And I guess the highlight of the whole thing was getting to shoot cows out of an airplane. And I enjoyed that. But the old, they was two pilots
That's the trapper's video game right there.
Yeah. they had two pilots. One of them was a young guy. He was the son. The older man was almost 80, and he had been shot down in World War II, and his reflexes were like mine. They wasn't too good. And man, I tell you, we'd nearly hit the ground a bunch of times. And he had prostate problems, and he would have to, if I could say, take a leak, you know, about every 30 minutes. Well, he just down it right there on the road, and then get back in and take off. We'd do that 8 or 10 times a day, you know, just wherever he wanted to take a leak, he'd lay her down there and get out and do his job, and we'd go. But it was something. And then he would get up, say if there was three coyotes, and you had to be careful. I don't know if you've ever done it. Now, you had to be careful shooting out of that plane because you got the strut, and you got the prop, and you got the wheels, and you don't want to hit either one of those, you know. So as you're going, it's about like going down the road in a pickup truck with a handful of rocks and trying to hit a sign. You were on about 90, you throw into that sign, you know. And we get up, maybe if there's three of them running, and maybe you shot two of the other turn, go the other way, and he'd lay that plane up there, and you was sliding in there, and him a cussing and wanting to turn, and me sitting there, you know. It was a different world.
See, y'all didn't use helicopters, y'all actually used planes. Yeah,
they do, but they're so expensive. They say they can't afford to do it. And that was different. And this old man, I had to go with him. I didn't get to go with the young guy. But my buddy he killed 76 one day out of a plane. Of course, ideal is when it comes to snow and it comes out the sunshine and you see a track, they hit that track with that plane just like a dog, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And they finally you see the coyote running and they...
Well, I'm supposed to ask you about a coyote den, a cur dog, and giving it a kiss.
Oh, yeah. My wife had went out there with me, and I took two mountain cur dogs to hunt coyotes. And if the coyote dogs that they use are good dogs because the bad dumb ones get killed. Them coyotes kill them. But you want a dog that will get out. We'd usually run a siren or howl real loud, because in that big country, mouth don't carry like a siren. And you hear one howl, and then you go set up and be sure and keep your vehicle hid, because that out there, the vehicle's on about the only thing they knew if they see it. Well, you know how paranoid a coyote is. And your dogs would get out there. If they heard one howl, they'd go to him and fight him a little bit, but they keep coming back. And he'd run them so far, and then if he stops running and starts back, they will go after him. And they, a good one will bring them back, and you got to watch. I've had them almost run between my legs because they got tunnel vision. They're just after that dog, you know, and I enjoyed that. But I'd come in, and one night, we had the camps set up, and we was all by ourselves, although there was four trappers had the entire, from the half of Colorado north. There was four of us trappers. I had the area right south, Steamboat Spring, called Oak Creek. And you take your dogs out like that, and like I said, when they hear someone howling, they'll go to him and bring him back to you. Well, I had come in from a camp one night, and there in Craig, Colorado, and I was watching television, and they was doing mouth-to-mouth resuscitation on a dog. I thought, man, who would do that, you know? Well, the next day, believe it or not, the next day, we called a coyote and killed a female, and we located the den. Well, when we located, almost all dens had two entrances. We'd close one, and we'd put these smoke bombs with gas in it in the other one and stop the den up. And usually, one end or the other, if it had five or six coyote pups, they would all be right right there. It's close to getting out. So we were sitting there waiting until we had time. The way we found the den that day, this dog's name was Trevor. He was a good coyote dog. And he got after a little one and ran it to the den. And it went to the den, he was barking. So we went to him, found the den, stopped one end up, put the gas bomb in and stopped it up. And we sat there talking. And one of them said, wonder which hole it was come out. And I said, it'll be at this one. And the boss said, no, I bet it'd be here. He said, I bet you a cheeseburger. And I said, okay. So we bet a cheeseburger on which end it'd be. So we gave him enough time. And I opened the den where I thought it was and shined the light, and there was eyes shining at me. I didn't realize at the time that the coyote was dead, the little pup was dead. But we thought he was, with his eyes shining, still alive, so we closed up, put another bomb in there. So we waited a few minutes, and I had a male and a female mountain cur. The female, if she could go in a den, she'd try to dig and bury them in there. But he'd go in and get them, bring them out. But she wouldn't. She never would bring one out. She would try to bury it in there. So we opened up the hole and let it air out a minute, and the dog went in there to get it. And we was talking, and after a while, my buddy said, any time that dog come back out? And I looked, and he'd been in there, I guess, 10 minutes. And I looked, and he was just laying there limp, you know, just dead, wasn't breathing, nothing. And I was too big to get in the hole, but one of the trappers was small, so I got a hold of his feet. He crawled in there, and the boss got a hold of my feet, and we pulled him out, and he was lifeless. But now, I didn't put my mouth on his mouth. I cupped my hand, you know.
Mm-hmm. That's not what I heard. So, I heard it was tongue and all, man.
So we was beating on his heart, and we did that for a while, and all at once he jerked, and then jerked a little more, and then got a breath. And he came back. That dog was dead in the doornail. And we came back, but I had to carry him to the truck. He was weak. He couldn't stand up for the rest of the day. And he never was right after that.
That's a good answer.
Yeah, I think it, you know, the time he was out with no oxygen, I think it did something with a part of his brain, because he never was the dog after that he was before. But, you know, you can do things sometimes that you don't think you do if a situation comes up. So,
the reason I thought that was so funny, me and Newt shooting a turtle video in North Carolina, and the water came up, and we normally don't use floating, we don't mm-hmm. use hoop nets, because if the water comes up, the turtles are drowned right. eventually. And ours we were using that are floating. Well, we were showing in the video how to set up these hoop nets. Well, the water came up, great big old snapping turtle in that thing. And Newt's like, well, we got to bring him back to life because we're selling the turtles.
Right.
And I'm looking at him and I'm thinking, what are you going to do? Give that thing mouth to mouth? Well, he laid it a certain way, one part of it up and one part of it down, and he started compressing its chest, and that turtle came back to life. And I'm like, right? You got to be kidding me.
Well, you know, I thought we lost a dog, but we brought him back. I wouldn't recommend everybody do that.
Well, do you mind, as you can tell, this is probably the most organized way someone does a radio show, but you've said a couple of things I'd like to talk about.
Okay.
Just because we've never had anybody with what I would consider enough experience to talk about something like this. One is denning, because there's a lot of people that are curious about that, and the other ones are the guns.
Okay.
So how do you find the dens, and what are you looking for? And is it different here in the East?
Oh, it's entirely different here. My boss came to see me, and bless his heart, he was a man's man, which I think is about as good a compliment as you can give a man, to say he was a man's man, you know. But he has Alzheimer's now in a nursing home, don't even know where he's at, don't even know me, don't know nothing, you know, and that just come on within a year or two. But when we got out there, that was what I enjoyed doing, was hunting those dens. But it was different country out there. And he told me, you know, I told him, I said, man, I don't believe you do it. Yeah, he said, I can back there. So he came and visited me two different times, brought his family. And he said, Lord have mercy. He said, I wouldn't know where to start here. Because, see, a lot of our coyotes here in this county, they'll get in a brush pile or an old holler log or in somebody's old building or something like that. But out there, it was kind of the high desert. And if you get out there and look around and you saw some green, usually that meant there was water. And these coyotes and pups, the females got to have water, you know, in order to nurse the pups. And then you get and you see all these coyotes. And the tracks here, tracks don't last long. Well, there ain't many places you can see a track here, you know, with the leaves and grass. Out there, they water grass all the time. Here, we try to kill the, keep, you know, my yard. I wouldn't care for every blade of grass. I get tired more than the stuff. But you get out there and you see all these tracks, and they'll eventually start funneling in to just one little beat down trail, and you'll be within 1,500 yards of that den. And I would go up to these dens, and of course they move them, and some of the dens are fairly clean, and some of them, they stink. They literally stink. And I would go up to den, and spider web's another thing. If there's a spider web across the den, ain't nothing in it. And I'd just get down next to the den, and I'd go, and every little pup in there would run right out to me. And they'd see me, then they'd run back, you know. So then we'd gas the den, and usually we don't have the, you know, call the female, the male, we'd try to get them first. And I enjoyed hunting dens. But the little pups, sometimes if you wasn't careful, your conscience would kind of work on, because they were pretty, they look like a little pup, you know, but of course they do damage. But and the mountain lions was a big thing out there too with sheep. We had one mountain lion kill 136 lambs in one night.
Just for fun.
Ate a little bit of one and just piled the rest of them up in the bluff. He'd carry them about 50 yards up at the bluff and had, you couldn't haul them in a pickup truck, what they had piled up. And
so did y'all trap him or shoot him?
We caught that one, a trap. I gave a hide to the UTK, United Trappers of Kentucky. They've got one of the hides that I got from out there. And I've got one at home when I do demos here. And the kids, they really like those. But this one came in to my boss's yard and killed his granddaughter's little pup. Took it, ate a little bit, and then covered it up, you know, and he caught it before 9 o'clock at night. Caught in a trap. It's a big old one. But probably a scarier thing, it didn't happen to me, but it's about the scariest thing, was one of the trappers went down next to Dinosaur, which is right next to you, to the Idaho line. And he had that area. And one of the ranchers had called in and said, I got a sheep dead, and I think it's a mountain lion. So he loaded his cur dogs up and drove down, and he looked and he saw the sheep down there about 50 yards. So he got down and walked down and determined it was a mountain lion kill. He came back up, started turning his dog loose, and he looked down there, and the sheep was gone. And I'd say it was within 10 feet of him, laid down watching him. Mm-hmm. So he turned his dog loose, and wide open they went. And that thing jumped a big fence, a 6-foot fence, with that sheep in its mouth, and went to the first pine tree and went up, and he killed it. And it was all full of porcupine quills all over, you know, if they get those things. But he could have easily lost it right there. Where that thing came in.
Oh man, I don't anymore because I'm getting fat, old, and lazy. But I used to, when I'd go to Texas, if I didn't trap a cat that day, I wouldn't go to bed till I called one.
Yeah.
And if it happened in 30 minutes, it was great. If it happened at 5:30 in the morning, I would not go to bed till I had a buck.
Was that right?
It was just.
I wish we could have met when I was younger. Because I think you're kind of a loner, and I was too. You
know, yeah. I mean, I enjoy when guys come down to Texas to school, but my best times in Texas were just me and nobody else running around Texas trapping stuff.
Right.
But what I learned with those cats, because what you said makes perfect sense to me, I'd call at night.
Uh-huh.
And I killed more cats, not from the call, but down there they have senderos where they cut them in the brush.
Right.
And I will call and call and call, and I'll give them about 40 minutes on a stand. And if I don't see anything, I put down the rifle and I grab the shotgun, and I learned to go down to number 4 shot.
Yeah.
And I would walk that sendero with a headlamp on. And most cats were killed from one end of this vehicle to the other, and they were sitting. They wouldn't come out in the open, but they were just curious enough to come out the edge. And they wouldn't move until they knew that you saw them.
Yeah.
So I'm walking down through there with a shotgun, and most of these cats were caught. And I learned the hard way, at 6 feet, you don't shoot the cat, because there ain't nothing left when you shoot a cat. So I'd try to shoot like 8 inches in front of its nose, and 2 or 3 of those pellets would hit it in the head, and it would fall over. But those cats would sit there and let you walk within 3 feet of them. If you never looked at them, they'd never move.
My boss had a big scar right down through there. I asked him what did it, and he said a mountain lion.
Well, the guns. What guns were you using? Were they
the cyanide gun,
M44s.
Yeah. The ones that they used to use, you know, that use the 38 shell.
Mm-hmm.
They worked great, but if an old cow pulled on it, it would kill a cow because you had a bullet coming up, and plus they popped real loud. You would kill a cow. Sometimes they might go. Now, this is what the boss told me, because they wasn't using it when I was out there. He said they may run a mile for the die that's hard to find, but then when they went to the spring-loaded one, it don't make any noise. It shoots the cyanide right in their mouth. And elk were bad to roll on it, but they didn't tell me how to. I had to learn myself how to use it, so I finally learned to. If you're out in the pasture and you dig a little trench about 3 inches wide, about 3 inches deep, like something that dug a hole, and lay a cow pie over it when you get it set, and it's underground. Well, coyote will flip that over, and when he bites, it ain't from the side, it's right straight in there, and when it goes there, they have a little paraffin cap on the end of them, and if it's laying there, you're sure you've got a coyote. If you don't find it, then it means it shot a long way off. And biggest part of them would be laying before you see them. You very seldom had to track very far before you found one.
Now, were you nervous using those for your own safety?
I tried not to be. I learned, you know, to cut my hand and always get upwind from them. Because the wind out there blows, you know. When we was calling cows, the wind out there in Craig where we was at, it would blow from the east till 9 o'clock. And at 9 o'clock, you could set your watch with it. It'd come out of the west. You could set your clock with it every day. And if you get downwind, and I did have two or three go off on it, but you know, when you're the worst trouble is screwing it on, where it will pull and go off, and because two or three of the ones I had was had a hard trigger on it, and I had them go off, but I'd cut my hand, and then wind would blow it, and I guess it was still dangerous, but we had to have an antidote with us, you know, it was required that you do that.
You think the antidote would have worked?
I doubt it.
Like in the army, they give you these things that like 16 penny nails to drive in your leg if you get chemical.
Yeah.
And you ask them what it is. Well, it's adrenaline. Well, okay, I'm going to be hyped up when the thing kills me. Right. I'm not sure what good it's going to do.
Clint, there's a couple of trappers. Now, we was out, they have what they call winter pasture and summer pasture. Summer pasture's up in the mountains. Winter pasture, they bring them down, you know, where the snow ain't so bad. And they have these old sheep herders. And you talk about a guy that you would have to respect. This man was 94-year-old. He was an old Mexican. He was up in the mountains. And his kidneys locked. He catheted himself with a coat hanger. He straightened the coat hanger off and catheted himself to get some relief from his kidneys. Because that's a key, you know. You can only poison in urine. But now, can you imagine that? With a stiff war, and that's not a straight shoot. But he did. But two of the trappers, we always, you know, they would meet and drink coffee because you was always by yourself, you know, wasn't two of you together. And they were doing a grizzly bear study in Yellowstone with live traps. And so they separated that morning and after drinking coffee. And one had one set way up on a mountain there in Yellowstone. He went up there and he had a big female grizzly. So he gets his tranquilizer gun, shoots her, gets his ear tagging equipment, everything, raises the door and goes inside, and he hears something noise, and a gate falls, and you can't open that gate from inside. And he's got a rifle, a pistol, and a knife in his truck. He don't have anything. And he keeps searching desperately, and that shot usually lasts about 45 minutes, and he's already about 20 minutes into it. And he's got a pair of fingernail clips, and he starts as quick as he can, and with about 2 minutes to go, he pierces a jugular vein, but now she dies, but he's still sitting there in that trap. 2 days later, his buddy gets to wondering, where's my buddy at, so he drives up, check on him.
That is terrible.
There he sits on this dead grizzly, been sitting there for 2 days, and then the poop hits the fan. He's killed an endangered species on a national park. $50,000 fine and 10 days in jail, and they're going to stick it to him. But everybody raised so much cane, they finally just... I know what that grizzly would have done, you know? Mm-hmm. So it's just...
What the, you talking about a man's man? Kill a grizzly bear with fingernail clippers.
That's all he had. I had a buddy said, I'd have loved that bear to death. Because I tell you, I know what would happen.
They did. They fined him and put him in jail for...
They was going to. They was going to give him a $50,000 fine and 10 years in jail. And they were done processing. Everybody kept raising so much cane and explaining the situation. It was either him or that bear. But I'll bet you that old boy's a little more careful from now on when he goes in one of them cages.
Holy cow. So did you run a lot of steel traps out there also?
Believe it or not, while I was out there, that's when Colorado, while I was there, Colorado outlawed the steel traps.
Okay.
And this is something, in my childhood, boyhood days, every time anybody said anything about Colorado, to me, that was trapping country. You know, that was the wilderness. Everybody wanted to go to Colorado. They did the survey. And a lot depends the way the thing's worded.
Absolutely.
They said, do you think it should be legal to set a cold steel trap that will catch an animal and break its leg, and he'd lay there for about 4 days suffering before the trapper goes gets him? I would have voted against that.
Mm-hmm.
And you know where they did the survey? Middle of Denver. Biggest part of them people didn't know what a coyote was, and so it went down. So all of those steel traps, they melted them down. All of those big old 3Ns, that's worth a almost a fortune now, you know, if you had enough of them, they smelted them down. So the only thing we could do then was call them, use cyanide guns, and it had to be on private property with permission. You couldn't put it on any national park or anything. You had to have the signs up and all that.
I was gonna ask.
And there were so many, you couldn't, above any water drain. Well, where can you go that's not a water drain? Water's going to drain somewhere, just about everywhere. Even if it goes in a little pond, it drains down to that pond. But snares, we could still use snares. And I caught two or three crippled female coyotes, and those are the killers. The one that's crippled, you know, the female, she'll kill more sheep, more lambs than any of them, because she's limited in trying to catch deer and stuff like that.
But that's really how they worded that in...
Yeah. And that's the reason it passed. I would have voted against that.
Words are powerful.
They are.
Have you quit beating your wife? I mean, how do you answer? You don't know what to say, but I mean, it's a trickery of words is what it is.
Yeah, that's it, yeah. Well, they can word it. You can't argue with a newspaper. They got the last say.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and you can't argue with printed words. You're going to lose. But I always think what a guy told me one time, the school principal, a real nice guy, he told me two things I always remembered. He said, if you got a rat in your house and you want to get rid of it, he said, there's better ways than burning your house down. And I always thought that was pretty good. Another thing he said, he was talking about this one guy had done something, and he said, I thought he's wrong, but I couldn't get it across. Said, I told him, said, you know, if 100 guys start out walking at the same time, 99 of them start out with their left foot, and you start out on your right foot, he said, there's a slim chance you might be out of step. And I thought that was pretty good. I've always remembered that. But then people say, well, maybe them 99's out of step. So, you know, there's some people you can't get to.
Well, back when you were younger, here in Kentucky, you probably had fox. You didn't have coyotes.
No coyotes.
Did you have rats then?
Up here? Yeah. Uh-huh.
And probably very few raccoons.
I remember the first raccoon I ever saw. The guy's dog treated up a little wild cherry tree one night. They killed it and brought it to Burkesville over here. People came from miles around saying they had never seen a coon. That's the first thing I ever saw. And back then, we didn't have videos. And the trappers, the people that trapped them, they wouldn't help you. They didn't want you to know, you know, what how to catch something. And they were mostly trail trappers. We had an old guy's his name was Will Hulse. I thought the world of that old man. He was a ginseng digger. He never worked as far as holding down a job, but he raised a big family just living off the land. Now, he literally lived off the land. He was the best mink trapper I ever seen in my life. Mink ever made a track, he'd catch it. And I remember right up here at the Courthouse Square that you went around one time. Back then, people come town, they had, wasn't many people had cars. They had wagons and horses, and they had a place, they'd be 40, 50 wagons and horses up there. They come to town on Saturday, and they'd walk the square. You go up there and make two trips around that square, and now somebody thinking something wrong with you.
Mm-hmm.
But then that's where they did all the courting, and everybody did everything. Just, you, they wasn't room to work. And of course, we had preachers on each side of the courthouse, preaching hell, fire, and brimstone, you know, but what they's doing, taking up collection. Scared me to death one time. This preacher said, come here, boy. I said, we need a quarter so we can get cash to go to Albany. I didn't have no quarter, and it scared the poop out of me, you know. But this old
you were
man,
gonna be the reason God's work couldn't be done, right? Right.
But Will Hulse, back then people were working for 50 cents a day, if they could find a job. Mick was $18. He had 7 Mick, and he had the toe split and had them in sticks like you'd hang a squirrel. He had 4 on one side and 3 on the other. I bet you walked around that square 150 times, and there was 40 or 50 people following him. Just, I mean, he was a walking tall boy. But that old man, I liked him. Yeah, he was a good man. And ginseng, he could see a piece of ginseng 200 yards when he was 80 years old. And finally died, and at his funeral, they at the flowers, they had a big ginseng hole with the flowers, you know, around it and everything. But I miss him. He was a good guy.
So when you started trapping, were you pretty much a trail trapper? Is that how you figured out?
No, I started water trapping. I caught my first fox in the trail. And Glenn, I'll tell you something. If you live to be 100 years old or 200 years old, I'm going to tell you what not to do. Okay? Because a guy did me this way one time. I was a little old boy. I was about 7 or 8 years old. And I had an old dog, and he treed a coon one night. And I shot it down. I didn't know how to skin one, but anyway, I skinned it. I caught a gray fox in a trail set, and all I had was little number ones. But I caught a gray fox in the trail. And I caught a muskrat. And I remember the first time I ever saw it. I see these things swimming. I didn't know what a muskrat was. Nobody ever told me. He was drowned and feet sticking up. And I thought I had a duck because he had them, you know, how they got web feet. But anyway, I skinned those three critters. Hardly ever got to come to town. So Daddy told me, he said, this place up here, but Curtis McComas's, said the guy buys fur. Well, he said, I'm going to town Saturday. He said, you be ready. And so I went in there. Man, I was 10 feet tall and bulletproof. I was feeling good. I had 3 big furs. And went in, though, and this guy said, what can I do for you? I said, I got some animal hides to sell. He went back and put a big apron on, put his gloves on, you know, and Glenn, I'll never forget it. Don't never do nobody like he did. I proudly laid him up there, and he said, boy, you ain't got much, have you? That killed me.
Really?
And he gave me, I think, 45 cents for all 3 of them, but it wasn't that. If he'd give me a nickel and said, man, you have done good. I can't believe you caught off. Shoot, I'd have been walking out. But I said then, I'll never try to put a kid down.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'd always try to find something good about a child. And I never forgot that. I said, boy, you ain't got much, have you? You don't need those kids that way.
Mm-mm.
And when I was principal out here at school, I had a rule. I told the teachers, every week, you got to catch a kid doing something good. And I said, we send it to the parents. I got phone calls from him. Parents said, we can't believe that. Said, the only letter we've ever got was where he got in trouble. You know, and then after I left, why they did away with it. But people does a lot like what they're expected out of them.
Mm-hmm.
I had a principal in high school. He tried to catch me doing stuff all the time. And like Tom Sawyer, I thought, well, ain't no use in being disappointed. So I'd do something, you know, so he could not stay in trouble all the time. Man, when I was a sophomore, I had 17 F's and 21 D's on my grade card and passed. 21 F's and 17 D's on my grade card. And I passed.
How did that work?
They didn't want to put up with me. That, I guess, moved me on. But, and then I went to college. I went to college on the scholarship, and I told you last night about what I thought. You know, I thought, you know, they said you got to take 16 hours. And I thought, shoot, I've been working sawmill 8 hours a day. I can knock it out in 2 days, but it don't work that way, you know. Oh, man.
You know, one of the things I've when I hear people talk about trail traps, see, that I've got a love for that.
Yeah.
Me, blind sets, I'm not going to say exactly what I told Daryl to do, but Daryl came to me. His son's a student of mine. He came to our bass trapping school. And he was like, you know, I want to beat Phil Brown. You know who Phil Brown is?
Never heard of him. I don't know personally. You know,
I mean, just an awesome fox, any type of trapper up in Pennsylvania.
Right.
And he, just because he, not because he wanted to put him down, because he was like, if I can get that just one time in my life, I'd like to, you know, do there. So he asked me some advice. And I'm like, well, and I had him tell me what they were doing. And I said, well, if it was me, I would do this. And trail setting was the major part of that in using their sets as decoys. Anyway, he won the whole competition. He beat Phil Brown. He was all tickled to death. But I think in our modern way of trapping today, that has just become something someone says every now and then.
Yeah.
But they never really go out and do it, so they never understand the power of what that is if you get good at it.
Right.
Because it, to me, that trail, when you sit there, and you don't know what you're going to catch, that's what's amazing.
Yeah.
But it doesn't matter if he's hungry, if he cares about what you put in the hole, which way is the wind blowing.
Yep.
You know, all that type of stuff goes out the window. And I think people would probably catch a whole lot more fur if they'd spend some more time setting strictly blind sets.
I know they would. Especially, you know, if you get up where not too many dogs, use those 220 conibears, you know. Of course, that's the largest trap we can set on land here in Kentucky. But a lot of people, Clint, I've coon hunted a lot. I've had some good coon dogs. But some of you coon hunters, they don't think right. They said, I've had up here in what you call the pool room up here where a lot of them hang around. I've heard him say, well, that guy catch my dog, I'll burn his house. Well, he's talking wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Because if I catch his dog, he ain't going to know it. But if it's me and I got a good dog, I'd rather him come home crippled as not come home at all. Or not crippled, but limping as not come home at all.
Mm-hmm.
But if a guy says he's going to burn my house if I catch his dog, and I catch his dog, he ain't going to know it. I may turn him loose. It'll be after he's dead. I shouldn't be saying this, but that's the way it is.
Well,
that's just like rules of war. How can you have rules of war? If you're going to kill somebody, kill them. I mean, I guess this poison and everything is bad, but every fight I got in, I didn't go with rules. I was going to whip that guy one way or the other if I could, and he was doing it the same way. I don't see these rules. You can only fight. You can only hit me a certain way. You just can't hit me another way. That wasn't the way I was raised up.
Well, you know, if a coon, and I've had coon hunters tell me that, and they, I think unwillingly or ununderstandingly, they set themselves up in a situation where they put the trapper in a situation where he may do something he wouldn't other do because he don't want it to escalate.
Right. That's exactly right. And what they don't, a lot of the coon hunters think, and beagle hound guys, they think we set traps trying to catch a dog. You don't want to catch a dog, he ruins your set.
Mm-hmm.
You might catch a $100 cat in that set, you know, if that dog hadn't got in it. I don't know of anybody that really traps during the trapping season that's trapping for a dog. You know, that's...
No, not
some people are hard to understand, you know.
Well, when you could use steel traps out in Colorado, were y'all using mostly flat sets out there or holes?
The boss did the biggest part of steel trapping, and the way he did all that open country, you know, with two lane road, he'd set right in the middle of the road and you'll drive straddle if it didn't. It was just mostly urine post sets or just back up. Now he liked these turds. He collect every turd he could find. You know, this little old bushes that smell so good. What do you call them? The sage. He'd get a little clump, you know, and he'd lay a couple turds on that and just sit right in front of that. And that's
no lure, no urine, no anything.
No, and he didn't use gloves. He said, they ain't a dog in the country. I don't know if I agree with that part, but he said, they ain't a dog in the country that can come out here in this hot sand 2 hours and smell where you've been. But I believe a cow can smell a little better. I read something the other day that kind of struck home. If you could put smelling in the same, change it to, or if you could put sight and change it to smelling, just like what you can see out here is 20/20, if you could put that in smell, what you can smell at the distance for 20/20, a coyote can smell 6 miles away. Just to give you an idea what kind of nose they got.
Wow.
And of course, the longer the nose, you know, the more, that's the reason a bear, you know, bear can smell unreal. And I caught a bunch of bears when I was out there. And of course, a coyote can smell. But it's just like you said yesterday, there's a difference in coyotes and foxes.
Mm-hmm.
A coyote is just, he's more cautious, more nervous, and he just, until he wants it, and of course, he can do a lot more damage than a fox can. But until he decides to, well, he's pretty cautious. And there's always exceptions to the rule. You may catch a dumb one. It's like people.
Mm-hmm.
People are not all the same. You'll see dumb people just the same as you see smart people, you know. And I think some animals are that way. Some of the first ones, probably some of those first yearlings we catch, you know, are like that, don't know all about it.
What do you do for your coyote trap? You still coyote trap now, any, or you go back to the water?
Well, see, Kentucky's got a thing with Frankfurt. When you turn you... How do you pronounce it? Cities or sites?
Cities tag.
Cities. Well, this girl, you know, what's the recording, what you call it, she called it cities tag, and I've heard people around here call it sites tag, you know. So, but anyway, when you fill all these papers out,
she's from Kentucky, man. Give her a break.
No, she ain't. She sounds like she's from China, I think, where she's from. You fill out, you know, would you be willing to help a farmer catch his cows? Well, the first year I did, but then they called me. It's hard to give up catching a $100 bobcat or a $100 otter and go catch a $10 coyote. So I didn't have to sign up the next day, you know. Mm-hmm. I mean, the next year. I want to help them, but, you know, you see what I'm talking about. You know, mm-hmm. you got the price of gas and stuff, you know, you can't catch enough coyotes to,
right.
to you know, to overdo your expense. But those, you asked them about those sets in Colorado, that's what they... And another thing, I respected the boss and thought, you know, he was sharp. But I disagree with another thing. He says the 3N was the best steel traps ever made. He didn't like coil springs. But here, the 3N, you've got, you know, the long springs. You've got to throw all that dirt up in here. Sometimes it's half frozen. I don't think they'll go off near as good as a four-coil trap wheel. But now he wouldn't use a four-coil.
See, I agree with your boss.
You agree with the boss.
But that's fine. I mean, that's the great thing about trapping. You know, I'm gonna give that lecture today, and you can sit over and shake your head.
Well, I like that 3N is a great bobcat trap. I like it better for bobcats than I do coyotes. But it's I've got about two or three dozen of those original 3N still in the box.
Well, if you ever want to get rid of them, I will put them to use, brother.
Stacy White, the president, and them other guys, Steve and all of them, they cut off sound it was because it didn't trade with them. But I fixed them up.
Well, are you, what if I came along on your line now, what would I see you doing to catch a coyote?
You would probably catch me on the river after otter.
Okay. Then we'll take it that direction. What are you doing on a river to catch
is this local?
Dude, this is worldwide. There'll be people in different continents listening to this.
You know, I don't tell people around here because you know it.
Okay, everybody that's in Kentucky, you gotta turn it off right now.
Don't listen. This river's kind of hard to trap because it fluctuates maybe 12 feet a day, you know. But all these little sloughs that run in to the river, them otter run across them. I'll dig me a little trench. Put a 220 there, you catch every otter in this river. You know, it comes down to a point. Here's the river, and there's a creek runs. The creek usually will come in, and the river's running this way. If he usually come this way, and if he goes in or there, he won't go down here and up. He'll cut across.
Mm-hmm.
And I dig me a little trench, and man, you can. I told you about that in the caught last year down the river. I'd fix a place for a beaver or otter, either one. Had a 330 sitting there in the water. Had another 330 over here and had another set here. Well, I went the next morning and I had about a 50-55 pound beaver with a conibar around his neck, a conibar around his tail, conibar hanging up over him. He had a cigarette in his mouth and a green snuff can laying there. People tracks all over the place. So I didn't, you know, a lot of these farmers claim they own to the middle of the river. Well, some say, no, you're on to the high water mark. Well, the water before the dam was built went through the courthouse up here. So this would all be legal if it was that way. But about 2 weeks ago, I took the traps up because I thought, you know, I don't know Maybe somebody was trying to tell me something. It was. So about 2 weeks later, I had a buddy that died, and I was up at the funeral home, and I was sitting there, and the guy tapped me on the back and said, "You heard anything about beavers smoking lately?" I turned around, and he was dying to laugh, and he said, "We knew that was your trap." But I wouldn't have done it. I didn't get mad, but I wouldn't have done it because I might have caught something in those other two traps.
Mm-hmm.
But I was relieved to know that it wasn't some farmer man raising game. But
well, since they couldn't see your diagram, they probably don't understand what you said. So
okay.
So it's your secret's probably safe, but I'll okay. be using that.
Okay. Hey, you can slay them. You can catch everyone in there.
Well, you know, from looking at that, and this is the bad thing about having something that's completely audio. So me and you're talking more than anybody else is going to understand. But you know how you're saying how the river is and you got a creek coming down through it? What I'm thinking, where you don't have the curve you were talking about, you could go off those corners and plant like something big and brushy and use that as your trench.
Yep, that's what we do.
You get them to come up through there.
We had there's a guy that goes with me every once in a while. Like I said, I'm a loner. I'd rather be by myself. But although it's a good thing he wasn't by himself last year, because he was checking the DP and he'd run out and check it. I was driving the boat. He come back and pushed the boat off and his foot slipped. It had got a rail around it, and his foot went on that rail, and he's hanging off the front end of the boat, his head on the water, you know, and he couldn't get up. And so I had to pull him in. He'd have died if he'd been by himself. But I went on by myself. You got to be careful around this water.
Absolutely.
You know, this river. But I may have already told you this, but he's got a real dry sense of humor. And we was up there, and the beaver here in this river don't make many lodges. They're not over two or three for 50 miles. They go back in, just dig a big hole back in the ground. It's real soft mud. And as he walked up this place, well, there's a huge, big old beaver come out. It was a tan one, you know, the real yellowish tan. And then another one came out another hole, big old beaver, and they was out there slapping their tails, you know, like they did. River was real low, so I had a couple 330s, and so I set them over those two holes, and I put a long cable because I knew the river would be coming up. So next morning we came by, and the river was way up, but I was able to get the cables and pull them up. Had two little beaver about that long. And with his dry sense of humor, he said, "I know what happened." He said that mom and dad said, "You kids go out there and see if them guys have left yet." I guess that's what happened. I don't know. But they're still there, so this year I plan on getting them.
Well, this is beautiful country. I actually didn't know I lived this close to you. I may have to come up here one day and run with you just to see what you do, if you don't mind.
That'd be fine. But if you want to talk about coyotes, what I would do if I was out there, I like snare coyotes. And I'd get on these four-wheeler trails. I'd either put two snares, or you know, kind of block one down, and here we can catch a part of them, you know, in these trails.
I think that's the deadliest way to catch coyotes in numbers in the east.
Yep, I do too. And didn't you say you caught one with a tongue?
No, that was Mark June.
Okay, I caught one in a snare with one toe. That thing closed down, and he had one toe in it. You know, right before that lobe, that last lobe. But now he was one mad coyote. And he was mad, boy, because he had a lot of reach.
Well, you know, snares are interesting sometimes. I mean, you hang a 14-inch loop, 14-inch off the ground, and you catch a cottontail that weighs 4 pounds and is not but 6 inches tall with a perfect neck catch with a loop 14 inches off the ground. And I've done it several times.
You wonder if they was jumping, you know, like a rabbit will jump and just came down on it, in it? I don't know.
But, it, you know, the snaring is, in a lot of states, are getting so squirrely on what they can do that it's making, you know, you got guys in places like Pennsylvania now that are restricted to cable restraints to the point where, you know, they're trying to catch snare in no entanglement or cover with 3/32 cable.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's just skyline to the point of no return. It's just tough what a lot of states are doing to people.
You know Matt Jones.
Mm-hmm.
Matt told us down there he don't like snares. Of course, he's been in a little trouble. He said, "I've been handcuffed a lot of times. Said I ain't never had a noose around my neck."
Well, I don't know. Have you ever seen that Coyote Chaos video?
No, I haven't seen
that. Me and Matt were... He's trapping the Kentucky side of BLN, and I'm trapping the southern side, okay. And we're doing our individual filming, and we get together, and we just made a single video out of it. And you talking about rain? Oh, my goodness, was it rain. It was just nothing but sloppy mess. So we start hanging snares just out of self-defense. And he used to... And we're catching like 80% of our stuff in snares. Right. I mean, the weather is just miserable. And he kept saying that, I don't like snares, I don't like snares. And he had a statement, he would say, oh, women and kids can set snares. And I'm leaning on the back of the truck and I'm looking, there's like 8 coyotes in the back, 7 come out of snares. Right. And I'm like going, which one did this come out of? Which one did this come out of? I don't care how you catch them, I just want to catch them. If I'm going after them, that's for sure.
But if you went with me on the line and I have set traps, I use a lot of walkthroughs. You know, hopefully I'll catch a cat, but I catch a lot of coyotes with just those walkthroughs. I like to lay me a couple of sticks like this, one like this, set my trap here on that one. Lay them land here where they walk through like that.
So it's kind of like on the 45 degree angle walkthrough type thing.
You can, and you catch about every bobcat that comes through there, but boy, you catch a lot of coyotes too.
I try to make sets where the coyotes are scared to death of it, but every now and then you got some that just don't care.
Yeah, yeah. I like to catch them cats.
Well, man, I appreciate you doing this.
Well, like I said, I slaughter the English language, but man, it ain't gonna matter, is it?
Well, from doing this show, I get a lot of response from this, and it's something I enjoy doing because... We've never got to sit down for an hour and just talk about, you know, your history and I eat it up. You know, and we do technical shows where it's how-tos and this, that, and the other. Like we did the demo yesterday on the snaring. The ones that get the most response are ones like this because it's somebody's history and them growing up in a different time and seeing trapping from a different way and going to... I mean, it's just... If more people knew the guys that they were seeing at conventions had stories like this, and every trapper I've ever met's got a story. It's a neat thing.
You know, Clint, sometimes we wonder about the way the world's headed and the kids and everything with their video games. But I put a demo on after about 3 weeks ago out here at the middle school. I had over 200 students. And the teacher said, oh, you shouldn't take them all at once. I said, why? He said, they won't listen to you. I said, yeah, they will. And... So I started. I told him, I said, I've only got one rule. That is, when I talk, you listen. I said, if I see somebody talking among themselves, I said, I'll stop. Have you come down and finish the demo? That was the best bunch of kids I have ever worked with, and they asked the most sensible questions when we got through. It was sincere. They're hungry. I think they played these stupid video games enough that they're looking for something else.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we'll have a bunch of them down here today, because there's a bunch, you know, they couldn't wait. They couldn't wait to come down. And there was one little old burr-headed boy. It was me when I was his age. He was hanging around. He wanted to touch every trap. He wanted to, you know, and asked me questions after questions, and I thought that was me about 70 years ago. That was me right there, you know. So.
Well, I think there's it's innate in human beings being predators that when they come across information like you were probably given, it triggers that into them, and they don't ever really know that they're halfway interested in it. But when they start hearing it, you want to know what it is, and then the world and society and civilization just beats that out of them to the point where, you know, if you want to be happy, go get in a cubicle.
Yeah.
You know, and it's a shame.
It is. It's just like people won't say kill. People won't say dead. You know, I can imagine when I was a boy, 65 or 70 year old, and I'd went squirrel hunting and I came and killed a couple, and I came in and my dad said, how'd you do? And I said, oh, well, I euthanized 2 squirrels a day. He'd have beat the tar out of me, you know? He would have, he thought I was saying a dirty word.
Know what euthanized
No, he
would?
Didn't know. He would have thought it was a dirty word, you know. But, you know, I just understand people. It's like I told a lady the other day, was pretty much anti on a radio station. I said, in order for anything to live, something's got to die. And that includes if you don't eat enough of my bread. That was a green plant, a living plant one day. And I told her, I said, if you don't like to eat meat, or I mean, if you like to eat meat, but you don't like to see nothing shot or nothing, I said, believe it or not, it don't come from IGA and cellophane. That ain't where it started. I said, you just paid someone else to do your killing for you.
Mm-hmm.
And but a lot of people can't realize that.
What did she say?
She kind of come down a notch or two. And I told her, I said, I know this, and I hope my wife agrees with me. I'm more important than a rat. I don't think a rat's got as much right as I do. But some people do. They think a rat's got as much rights as that's crazy.
Mm-hmm.
As far as I'm concerned, it's crazy.
Because a rat may see it different, but
yeah, you know,
that's just the order of things.
But that's, if you got time to me tell you about Will Hulse.
Absolutely.
Like I said, he was an old ginseng hunter and a trapper. He trapped, but this river drove him crazy. He never could do nothing with it. Well, a buddy and I was trapping at Lake Cumberland. We caught 58 coons one night. We put them all in the pickup, took them, showed them to him. I thought he was going to have a heart attack. He said, oh, you're going to ruin it. I said, well, Mr. Hulse, what's the difference to catch 58 one night or catch one a night for 58 nights? Oh, he said it's different. But I still like the old man. He told me, my daughter at the time was working with Kentucky Field, the program, you know, Kentucky Field, where they go out, and I told them about Will. So they came down. I took off school that day and went with them. And every time that old man opened his mouth, they got it on tape. And they took him ginseng hunting. He was 88 years old, and he'd go through places and said, I can make it. I don't know if y'all can or not, you know. And dug all this ginseng, and that was the most asked for program to be repeated that they've ever had. This people wrote in, this one guy said, I was walking through my room and I heard that, said, I just sat down cross-legged, said, spellbound, that they're listening. But he told me one time, he said, we had two little kids and they lived what they call a houseboat. Well, his houseboat was 10 by 10 wood platform with a roof, tin roof on it, sitting on barrels. That was his houseboat. And they were tied up here around the Manville, up here up the river. Now, he said, we were starving. He said, there were no government programs or nothing like that. He said, we were starving. And he said, I told my wife, said, let's just drift off down towards Nashville. Said, it's got to be better. And he said, said she was always like that. Said, she was ready to go anytime. He said, she gathered up everything we had, put it in a pillowcase. And we pushed off. And that was before Lake Cumberland was built, Wolf Creek Dam. And he said the wind was blowing all day up, and he had to paddle, you know, downriver. And you get up here, what they call Buck and Doe. There's two little creeks run together within 50 feet of each other. And he said, I pulled up there and said, I was give out. He said, when I pulled up, he said, my wife started gathering up leaves and everything for us to lay down on. And he said, we laid down there that night. And he said, it was just a real beautiful night. And he said, I had my shotgun over here in my right arm. He said, I had my left arm out. We had the two babies laying between us. And he said, now, Smith, that's why he called me Smith. He said, now, Smith, he said, everything I had in this world was right there in my arms that night. And he said, the next morning, said, it started getting daylight. And said, I heard a quick, 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 quick. And he said, I looked, there's a big fox squirrel out there. And he said, I raised up, shot it. And he said, my wife got up, and she said, we had about a half a cup of flour. And she started making gravy. And he said, I skinned that squirrel. We fried it. I wish you could seen it. He said, now, Smith, said, that one in here, he said, I could feel that going in my muscles and down through my body. And he said, I grabbed that paddle down that river. Telling you, oh, I love that old man. I tell you.
Now, what was his name?
Will Hulse. So, H-U-L-S-E.
So I can probably find that on YouTube then.
Probably.
I've seen some of the Kentucky Outdoors stuff.
He was something else, I tell you. But a lot of people didn't like him because he didn't respect boundaries. He'd make axe handles. If he saw a little green hickory over on your land, it didn't matter. He went and cut it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And he got in a few people's cultivated ginseng, you know. But he thought it was all there. God put it there for anybody that wanted it, you know. And he wanted it. So that's what he did. He was a character. We missed him. He was something else.
Well, I mean, when you tell stories like that, it's hard even... It's hard for me to grasp that someone could be in that situation. Right. It's just hard. I've read several books about the Depression and you know, are you like some of the stuff from Raymond Thompson, his earlier writings, and it's hard for me to believe that world really existed.
Yeah, it did. It did. And it was, like I said, there wasn't no government program. In fact, on the film that they showed, you know, he said, when he was standing there while he's talking, he had this hole and he about cut their cable that one day he was doing the filming with. But he said, I think it ought to be like the Bible says, those that don't work don't eat. He said, I think that's the way it ought to be. He said, there ain't enough people working to support all these government programs. And he's pretty well right. Mm-hmm. And that was years ago when he said that. And he asked the guy, he said, you don't believe in all these giveaway programs, do you? The guy said, what? He said, you don't believe in that, do you? And he said, no. And he said, well, I thought you did. I wouldn't be in these woods with you. Mm-hmm. He said, I'd go home right now. And he said, they what you call hack ties, you know, they cut a tree and take an axe and make the cross ties, you know. And that's a lot of work where a saw, you know, can square it off. But it was a different world. It was a different world. Man's handshake was good back then. That's all mm-hmm. it took. And that's the part I miss, you know. I always think of one of the Eagles song where he says, I think about it, old Billy was right. He's talking about Billy Carter. In the song, it says, the more I think about it, old Billy was right. Let's kill all the lawyers. Let's kill them tonight. He said, there's too many lawyers.
Oh, and that's the truth, man. Well, we better wrap this up, but, I mean, I thoroughly enjoyed this.
And I
knew it was going to be good just from talking to you in the past. I want to say thank you because I use your sticks down in Texas. I don't know if you know
okay.
that.
Okay, did you? Is that right?
Those are pretty good.
Yeah, they are.
Well, I got a feeling I'm gonna try to get back up here. We're gonna figure out something else to talk about one of these days.
Okay.
Because I love talking about old days, just because it's in.
You like the squirrel hunt?
Oh yeah.
You know Steve Pritchard?
Mm-hmm.
That was past president. He comes down every year, long before squirrel season closes. We put in at Wolf Creek Dam and float down to here. It's about 40-some miles, and we have a big fish fry along the bank, Rockhouse Bottom. I need to take you to that someday. And it's legal. You can shoot squirrels out of a boat. Come up and go with me.
Okay.
And we'll have a good time. And I'll show you some of the places where I trap on the river and everything. But like I said, one reason I do more water trapping, because it's a lot easier setting that boat than it is climbing these hills up and down, you know. And like I said, about my knees, every step I take, that's one they're going to worry. You know, they only got so many bends in them. So if I ever see you and I'm sitting down and I say, I ain't going to get up because I ain't going to waste one of them on you. I don't think anything
ain't
about
gonna bother me a bit, brother. Well, I appreciate it.
Okay.